Radha Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shama Kunda Radha Kund Giri Gopadam Ki Jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki. Shri Navadvi Mayapur Dham Ki. Shri Gangamayi Yamunamayi Ki. Bhakti Devi Shrimati Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Sankirtan Shagya Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki. Nitai Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. It's an interesting experience sitting here in front of so many devotees. You should try it sometime. Hare Krishna. So, my name is Bhakti Prabhupada Vrat Damodar Swami. Hare Krishna. So we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, Text 21. Dharma Fachi Tatra Nabhutan Sauridam Dharma Fachi Tita. Excuse me. Dharma Fachi Tatra Nabhuta Sauridam Tyagam Fachi Tatra Nam Mukti Karanam Tyagat Pachi Tatra na Mukti Karanam Viryam na Pumsho Asti Aja Vega Niskritam Viryam na Pumsho Asti Aja Vega Niskritam Na hi dvitiyo guna sangha varjita. Na hi dvitiyo guna sangha varjita. Dharmak vachitatra na bhuta soridam. Jagat vachitatra na bhukti karanam. Viryam na pumsho styajya vega niskritam Nahi dvitiyo guna sangha varjitaha Dhamak vachitatra na bhuta soridam Jagat vachitatra na bhukti karanam Viryam na pumsho styajya vega niskritam Nahi dvitiyo guna sangha varjitaha Others? Dharmak vachitatra na bhuta soridam Jagat Vachitatra na Bhukti Karanam Viryam na Pumsho Styaja Vega Niskritam Nahi Dvitiyo Guna Sangavarnam. To avoid confusion, it's a good practice to follow the same melody that we established when we started the class. So try to do that. Try that one. Okay. Someone else? Dhammak vachitatra na bhuta soridam Jagatpachitatranamuktikaranam Viryamna pumsostyaja vega niskritam Hidvitiyo guna sangha varjitam Tamakpachitatranabhutasoridam Jagatpachitatranamuktikaranam Priyam napumshostya veja niskritam Nahidvitiyo guna sangra vajitam.
We've got very creative devotees. They're all musicians. Mantajis.
Dharmakpachitatranabhutasoridam Jagatpachitatranamuktikaranam Viryamnapumsostyachavedaniskritam Nahidvityogunasangavajitam Dharmakpachitatranabhutasauridam Jagatpachitatranamuktakaranam Nahidvityoguna-sangha-varjita dharma, religion, pachit, one may have full knowledge of, tatra, therein, no, not, bhuta-sauridam, friendship with other living entities, tyaga, renunciation, pachit, one may possess. Tatra, therein. Nam, not. Mukti karanam, the cause of liberation. Viryam, power. Nam, not. Pumsam, of any person. Asti, there may be. Ajavega niskritam, no release from the power of time. No, nor he, indeed. Dvitiya, the second one. Guna sangha varjita, completely freed from the contamination of the modes of nature. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Someone may possess full knowledge of religion, but still not be kind to all living entities. In someone, whether human or demigod, there may be renunciation, but that is not the cause of liberation. Someone may possess great power and yet be unable to check the power of eternal time. Someone else may have renounced attachment to the material world, yet he cannot compare to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, no one is completely freed from the influence of the material modes of nature. Purport. The statement, dharma kvachitatra nabhutasauridam, is very important in this verse. We actually see that there are many Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, and religions of other cults who adhere to their religious principles very nicely, but are not equal to all living entities. Indeed, although they profess to be very religious, they kill poor animals. Such religion has no meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:8 says, Dharmas panustitak pumsham vishpakshena katashuya nurpadayat yadiratim srama eva hi kevalam. One may be very expert in following the religious principles of his own sect, but if he has no tendency to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his observance of religious principles is simply a waste of time. One must develop a sense of loving Vasudeva, Vasudeva Svarmiti Samahatma Sadulava.
The sign of a devotee is that he is a friend to everyone. Suridam sarvabhutanam. A devotee will never allow a poor animal to be killed in the name of religion. This is the difference between a superficially religious person and a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We find that there have been many great heroes in history, but they could not escape from the cruel hands of death. Prabhupada's beginning a whole different topic here, which is picking up on a different sentence, a different line of the verse. Even the greatest hero cannot escape from the ruling power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when Krishna comes as death. That is described by Krishna himself. Mrityu savaharashchaham. The Lord, appearing as death, takes away a hero's so-called power. Even Hiranyakashipu could not be saved when Nrsingadeva appeared before him as death. One's material strength is nothing before the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tashma Shri Gurudeva Namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to try to share something on Srimad Bhagavatam. So what we'll try to fit in this class is something about the context of the verse, which has to do with the kind of competition going on. We'll also speak a little bit about, this is always a topic which you can actually revert to in any class, called the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. And the reason that I would bring up that topic is because Srila Prabhupada is using a particular method, a particular approach to commenting on this verse. It's a little bit different from what he will usually do, and we'll touch on that. And then, of course, related to that last point is that Srila Prabhupada will expand the first sentence of the verse, which is discussing being kind, the devotee is kind to all living entities, and he'll, in a transcendentally clever way, he'll expand that to the big picture of what is real religion, what is Bhagavad Dharma. And then finally, picking up on another one of the lines in the verse, the goddess of fortune is referring to everyone in this material world as being nothing in power compared to the Supreme Lord. And the proof of that is called death. So that's always a relevant topic. It becomes more relevant with every passing of day and night. And also is related to time. The principle of time and the principle of death. All right, so in terms of the context, and we'll see that Srila Prabhupada, in this particular case, he doesn't dedicate his purport to the context of the verse specifically, and he has good reason for not doing it, which I'll try to touch on. But the context itself, we can say a little bit about it. It's a competition. It's like an elimination contest, like neti-neti. Someone may be very great in a certain area, but he can't compete with the Lord. The Lord is infinitely greater in that area. Someone may be renounced, but the Lord is even more renounced. And ultimately, no one can escape death. So she's eliminating, in a few verses, so many potential candidates, even up to the great devatas. And she's showing that no one could compete. The Lord is called Asamurdva. That means no one is the same and no one is above him. So there are other examples of this kind of competition. For instance, this comparison, showing conclusively that you cannot compare any other entity with God, with the Supreme Personality of God. For instance, Rukmini Dev, when she comes back to her consciousness after she faints, where Krishna is joking with her, she points out that all the kings of this world, what are they? They just have these body with mustaches, and she kind of puts them in their place. And she says that they can't compare it to you, my Lord. And much more recently, the other day was the disappearance day of Tamal Krishna Goswami. Today is that of Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And Tamal Krishna Goswami, some of you may have seen, there was a very wonderful video many years ago where he was taking a poll. He had an audience of Indian ladies and gentlemen, and he was asking a simple question: who is God? And it was amazing the variety of different answers that came up. I won't go through the whole list, but everyone had their, well, maybe one person said Vishnu, but everyone had so many different candidates. Or not, for them, they weren't candidates. They were convinced that something, Sai Baba is God, or this one is God, or some great devata, Lord Brahma, or Ganesh. And they went through so many. So there are different situations where there's some confusion about someone may be theistic, that believe that God is a person, but then there's a question, who is that person? So the Goddess of Fortune is helping us to, well, we should already know, but she's confirming that Krishna's two Bhagavan is Svayam. Of course, we take that to the next level, and besides different devatas or even mundane, well, they're also of this material world, but even lesser mundane personalities have no chance to compete with the Supreme Lord. But even the Lord's incarnations, Krishnastu Bhaite Chamsa Kala Krishna, Krishnastu Bhagavan Svaya, that even amongst all these plenary portions and portions of plenary portions, Krishna specifically is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, in the context, Lakshmi Dev is going up to Vishnu. Of course, Vishnu and Krishna are the same person. Sometimes you may say, why aren't we called Krishnavs? Why are we called Vaishnavs? Why aren't we called Krishnavs? But that's okay. We're not going to... It's more, how should you say, inclusive, and we're one of the four Vaishnav, in one of the four Vaishnav sampradayas. So, there is a conclusion to that in Shastra that I think kind of sums it up. If there's any doubt at all, it says, Alodhya sarva shastrani vicharya chak punat punaha idam ekam sunishpanam deo narayana sada. This is from three different Puranas, Padma, Skanda, and Linga Puranas, and also in another Purana called Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, it's quoted in the purport in Chatur Shloki. By scrutinizing and reviewing all the revealed scriptures and judging them again and again, it is now concluded that Lord Narayan is the supreme absolute truth, and thus he alone should be worshipped. So this is the context. Lakshmi Devi is verifying that she's making an analytical study, and she's coming up with no one else. She'll be offering a garland to Lord Vishnu soon. So the next thing is, Srila Prabhupada, what is he doing in this purport? How is he approaching it? He's not Mother Lakshmi Devi, the Goddess of Fortune. She's already doing a very adequate job of discerning who is the Supreme Personality of God. So the question that Srila Prabhupada is dealing with, interestingly enough, is not exactly who is God, but who is the authentic devotee of God. Who is the authentic religionist? And he does that out of compassion, because this is for for our benefit. This is for our benefit. Yes, it's important to know who is God. But there's so much evidence that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and Srila Prabhupada is now taking it, who is a devotee of God? And hopefully we're included, or at least as aspiring devotees. So, how he does this is in the first paragraph of the purport, which includes a verse. Srila Prabhupada elegantly, I'm going to read what I wrote here, and make it, why reinvent the wheel, as they say. He elegantly expands from one vitally important characteristic of the authentic religionist or devotee to the even deeper underlying paradigm or criterion for such authenticity, which is love of God. In other words, the Goddess of Fortune is pointing out, and she's doing it in the context of trying to discover Hare Krishna, Shinga Bhagavan, confirm who is the Supreme Lord. So she mentions that someone may be a religionist but may not be a friend to all living entities, and there are some obvious examples of that. Thou shalt not kill, and that they don't follow. So Srila Prabhupada takes that, he's using that, he's quoting the verse that if one's religious practice doesn't evoke an attraction to hearing about the Supreme Lord, then shrama eva hi kevalam, it's a useless waste of time. Now why is he doing that? Because he's expanding this idea. He then quotes just that verse, suridam sarvabhutanam. Now that's referring to the Lord, but Srila Prabhupada is applying it to us. We also should be suridam sarvabhutanam. We can't be exactly in the same way that Krishna is. We're not in everyone's heart, for instance, guiding them and helping them. But at the same time, we are supposed to be a friend to all living entities, and that of course includes beyond just the human species. So in that way, Srila Prabhupada expands it. Now in the initial reference of Suridam Sarvabhutanam, that one should be a friend of all living entities, there are some amazing, wonderful examples. I wrote here, a friend to all. Srila Prabhupada was a friend to all. There's a book by that name, by the way, that was compiled by when Mataji Vaishnavi passed away. And it shows interviews with people that Srila Prabhupada had met before he came to America. And unanimously, they all felt that Srila Prabhupada was their friend. Not in a sentimental way, but in a very deep way. Suridam, the well-wishing friend. So the book is very appropriately entitled A Friend to All. So we have some examples. Prahlad Maharaj, King Ranti Dev, and of course, who was the other one? Lord Shiva. Interesting, the one with Lord Shiva is quite pertinent, and it was quoted about 10 days ago in a class, or at least mentioned that verse. Tapyanti lokatapena sadava prayasho janaham paramavaradhanam tadi purusha syakilatmanaham. That a great personality is almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of the people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. There's this one verse describing austerities of the demons in the beginning of chapter 17, those in the mode of ignorance, and how they torture their own bodies, and they also torture the super soul within. Well, that may be another verse in the, what is it? The 16th chapter. Mam atma sarva dehishu padvishanto vyashuya kaha. So the Lord is in everyone's heart. He naturally doesn't like to see living entities suffering. So the best way of worshiping, now I'm not saying that we should artificially torture ourselves. And there are so many religious sects where they actually do that, even Christians throughout the centuries. I won't go through all the different methods that they used. In India, there are so many forms of self-torture, even physically. And sometimes the goal is rather noble in order to become detached from the material world, but it's much more exalted when the goal is not that I'm going to become liberated and I'll become a stoic and I'll be able to, you know, just maintain my tranquility despite so much input from the senses, positive, negative. No, I'm doing that because I want to sacrifice my own comforts and my own well-being and my own equanimity even for the helping all these suffering living entities, like King Ranti did. Nakameyayam gati mishvadat padam astardi yuktam apunar bhavam va artim prapadye kila deha bhajam andakstito yena bhavantyatukaha bhavanti bhavanti adukaha. Let them all become bhavanti adukaha. Let them all become free from dukkha. The non-devotee is sarva dukkha sukhi and sarva sukha dukhi. He's very unhappy to see others happy, and he's very happy to see others unhappy. Now that sounds extreme, but if we look into our own hearts and remember how we were, and even a little bit still, we may still have some tinge of this very nasty psychology, we can say. But a devotee is sarva dukkha dukhi, sarva sukha sukhi. If someone else is suffering, he's suffering. Even Chanaka Pandit, that's one of the signs of real education. He sees all living entities as the same. And Krishna says in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita that one should see others equally in both their happiness and their distress. Sayogi paramomataha. This is the best kind of yogi. And therefore he tries to help people. And if he's very advanced, he'll be like Lord Shiva. And how is it relevant to the pastime? Someone could say, this verse, how does it connect with the pastime that we're hearing about? The big picture of the pastime is the churning of the milk ocean. And both the demons and the demigods were unhappy because the first thing that happened, what was the first thing? All this poison occurred. So what did Lord Shiva do? He's telling his wife, no, this is standard practice for great personalities. I'm supposed to be one of them? Then let me follow the standard practice. What is the practice? I will drink the whole ocean of poison so that others can... Lord Shiva didn't have much to gain in that, but he did it for others' benefit. The demons and the devotees, the demigods, were working so hard. They carried the mountain, they made so many arrangements. So it's connected. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj, Svastyastu Vishvashu Kalak Prasidatam, etc. Maybe there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. This is the fifth canto. For by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. That's called Bhutani Shivam Mitodhya. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, always remain absorbed in thoughts of Him. So Prahlad Maharaj is not only praying, and he even says, you know, famously to Lord Nrisimhadev, I don't want to be liberated myself. Actually, I have no problem, he says in another verse. Wherever I am, I could meditate on your glories and wonderful activities. So I have no problem. But tato soche, what is it? Yeah, I have one soche, I have one concern. And that all these fools and rascals, they're so engaged in sense gratification and bharam and taking on so much burden just to satisfy the senses. And then he says in the other verse that I don't want to be liberated alone. I don't want to go to you and leave behind all these poor kripanas, these miserly fools and rascals. I want to bring them to your lotus feet because I know that no one could be happy without taking shelter of your lotus feet. So there's more that can be said, a lot more than can be said about the importance of real, authentic religionists being kind to all living entities, not just kind in the sense that he avoids killing them, killing their bodies to satisfy his tongue, but he's also kind because he's sacrificing. Sankirtan Jagya. It's win-win, we can say. It's good for us, because what else can we do in Kali Yuga? But Sankirtan Jagya. Harinam. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalo kalona steva na steva na steva gati ranyata. But it's also good for others. That's why Haridas Thakur, he was saying the best kind of chanting is the out loud chanting, because other living entities benefit. Yeah.
So Srila Prabhupada, he takes it to the point that's specifically mentioned by the Goddess of Fortune of a real religionist. Of course, in the context, she's talking about just a person as compared to the Supreme Lord, but Srila Prabhupada's talking comparative religion here. Not like horizontal comparative religion, but vertical comparative religion, so to speak. He's comparing the authenticity, the depth, and the first symptom is that in real religious practice, one will be a friend to all living entities. Yes, the Christians, they have many teachings that one should love thy neighbor as thyself, but at the same time, due to the limited realization or the emphasis on just morality, mode of goodness, try to elevate them, just like the Vedic culture goes up to that point. But without going to Paradhamma, to transcendental religion, without this spiritual, transcendental platform being taught, then what happens? It's like in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita, you have knowledge in the mode of passion. In other words, religion, divisions of faith, chapter 17, Bhagavad Gita, religion is affected by the modes. So you have so many kinds of religions. So you have nana bhavan pritag vidan, that one sees in the mode of passion, he's thinking that inside every different type of body, there's a different type of soul, there's a different kind of living entity. No, that's not the way it is. In the mode of goodness, sabhabhuteshu yenaikam, he sees eka, he sees one Brahman, and everything. There may be a tendency there towards impersonalism, as Prabhupada points out in the purport. So, but at least there's this sense that, no, he sees everyone the same. Pandita samadarshina. So that's the basis. How could we really be a friend to everyone if we think that just because someone has a different kind of body, they're a different kind of living entity? Then we won't be kind. We may, even sometimes they say some have no souls. It was even one of the great church fathers, he was great in a lot of ways, but he wasn't so great in teaching that the animals are just automatons. They're just machines. Yeah, the bodies are machines, but there's somebody inside there. Jeremy Bentham, about almost 300 years ago, he was utilitarian in ethics. So he said, to decide whether or not we should have a slaughterhouse, there is no need, there's no purpose in asking a question, can the animals reason? It's not a pertinent question
Can the animals talk? Actually, they can reason and they can talk to a certain extent, but let's just for the sake of his argument say they can't really reason and they can't really, certainly can't reason and talk the way we're doing, materially or spiritually. There's only one question that we should ask. What was that question? Remember where the context there is, should there be slaughterhouses or not? Can the animals suffer? That's the question we should ask. And it's a good preaching, if you're preaching to Christians and trying to convince them that they should take to vegetarianism at least. It's good preaching because I personally experienced that they kind of cornered when you tell them that because they have pets and they know that my pet dog can suffer. Yes, animals can suffer. So it kind of, it makes them think. So this is natural for a devotee because he has the science of the soul, the science of self-realization. So he knows that they're like me, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and pleasure and pain. We can see around us, the animals are certainly experiencing these same sensations that we do. There's other things that we experience that are more elevated and all that, that they don't experience. But as far as the basic animal functions, they certainly. So Prabhupada brings it up to the next level. Expands the idea. This is a very crucial point. But he takes advantage of that and by quoting these verses, that one has to attain attraction for hearing about the Lord. And suridam sarvabhutanam, how it's connected, that this is real religion to actually learn to love God. That's at the end of the day, or it's the bottom line. This distinguishes parodharma from just either kaitava dharma. There's described as five kinds of cheating religion. We don't have time to describe, but there's Bhagavatam, of course, releases us and kicks away all kinds of cheating religions. But whether they're cheating or they're not religion, or not cheating religion, the point is that they're just, what is that called? Naimaitika dharma, as opposed to jiva dharma. They're just temporary adjustments to time and circumstances. And generally, they're trying to help elevate, just like the Vedic culture in general does, try to elevate people more up to the mode of goodness and a little detachment. The sum and substance, I would say, one really succinct statement that kind of encapsulates or summarizes the whole big picture of the kind, like for instance in the Vedas, you have astrology, you have Ayurveda, you have all these different Vedic teachings. But they're apara vidya. They're lesser kind of knowledge. They're basically contained within the material energy. And then you have apara vidya, which is knowledge of transcendence, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Paravidya, yes. Then you have paravidya. Thank you. Apara vidya is all these other things. They're Vedic, but they're apara vidya. So Devahuti, she puts it all in a nutshell, perfectly describes Neha Yat Karnama Dharmaya Navira Gaya Kalpate Natirta Pada Seyavayai Jivan Api Mrito Bishaha. How does that work? She says it's a step by step project. We're not, and it's not that they're all useless, but they become useless if they're not progressive. If they stay stagnated at a certain level, then they become cheating religion or asat, useless like that. What does it mean? Neha sva karma, neha yat karma dharma. That if one's ordinary work does not become religious or dharma, in other words, you have to elevate from from papata punya. In other words, your religious duty, it should be religious duty, not just invented type of obligation that I have, or just whimsical. According to Shastra, Yatsashtra Vijayotsrija. No, it should be according to Shastra. So if it doesn't elevate to religious or sacred duty, but then say that you do that, but then you're at that level where you're performing dharma, but naviragaya kalpate, that it doesn't lead to renunciation of this material world. That's the yoga ladder in the big sense of the term. The Vedic culture gradually elevates people from sin to piety, then to detachment, transcendence, and finally to devotion. This is certainly the blacksmith's method was mentioned the other day, or the elevator, express route. Okay, so now one has become detached. So are you there yet? No. Devahuti, she says that natirta pada sevayai, if one's renunciation, sometimes it's dry renunciation, it doesn't lead to devotional service of Tirthapad, that's the name of Krishna, the basis of all places of pilgrimage. Then, what is it? Jivan api mrito api shaha. Srila Prabhupada translates that he's considered dead even though breathing, or he's dead even though living. In other words, he's like the living dead. He's like just a dead body moving. So, in other words, each level is there, and we ourselves, I know, especially those of us coming from the Wild West, have been experienced this progression, even myself to a certain extent. But as we say in America, there's an expression to say, a miss is as good as a mile. In other words, the idea is to reach the goal. And if one gets stagnated or stuck at a certain level, then it's really shrama eva hi kevalam. It all becomes useless. Why does it become useless? Because what will protect one from going back down the other way, going down? The idea is to continue going up and finally get shelter in Krishna's lotus feet. Devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. Now it's interesting, we have this punya and papa, we have a sin and piety in the mundane sense, but then we also hear about, there is sin. You can say no sin, that just applies to like the mundane context, mundane religiosity. But we also hear about sin in a larger context, in the context of ordinary piety and sin as compared to transcendence. Maybe it'll be more clear if I read the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 3, text 61. Bhaktira virodhi karma dharma va adharma tahara kalma sanama sei mahatama. The greatest ignorance consists of activities, whether religious or irreligious, that are opposed to devotional service. It gets interesting here, doesn't it? They are to be known as sins, kalmasa. So you can have religious sin. Not in the material context, but when we go to paradharma, when we get to transcendence, spiritual, religious practice, truly ultimate religious practice of bhakti, then in that context, what might have been considered pious in the mundane context now becomes sinful. You'd be very, very religious, but no. I mean, wasn't that Advaita Acharya's lamentation? People were kind of religious. They weren't necessarily performing sinful activity in that context. But they were sinful in our context, and I'm saying, I don't want to say we're so great, but in our context, the superior context of devotional service, then that what was considered pious now becomes sinful if we take it to the big picture. And Prabhupada is implying all this in the verse, in the purport. And that's also confirmed, like Yamaraj, sin. You can have sin in transcendence. Well, you can have sin by not... How does Yamaraj put it? I'll just read the English. My dear servants, talking to the Yamadutas, no? Okay, 6.3.29, Bhagavatam. Bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name, Jivana Bhakti Bhagavan Guna Nama Dayan, and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once. Chaitas Chanasmarati Touch Tadanaravindam, whose heads, Shira, whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties toward Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals. So this is a special standard of the Bhagavatam, isn't it? It's even so elevated that it's sinful not to be a devotee in the ultimate issue. Bhagavad Gita is so wonderful. I was hearing yesterday, Prabhupada said that there's no book in the world that will give so much knowledge like Bhagavad Gita, so condensed and so, those 700 verses give the whole scope of everything. And obviously, so many chapters in Bhagavad Gita culminate in devotional service. Yes, until one develops a taste for devotional service by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act according to the regular principles of the Vedic injunctions. Does that apply to us? Well, maybe it does. Still, to that extent that we're not completely surrendered, so we shouldn't just flout the Vedic injunctions. Some of us, I was on traveling Sankirtan, and Vedic injunction is, well, you shouldn't lie, right? It's not good to lie. And I was told by my Sankirtan leader to call the police. And there was a group called the Black Muslims, and they had taken over the parking lot. They were distributing some fish and some pamphlets or something like that. I never lied. I mean, knowingly. I mean, I wasn't very pious, but somehow I didn't lie. I couldn't lie. I didn't. So I had to go in the phone booth and dial the phone and call the police and tell them that these Muslims came and they just harassed my wife. It's another lie. I was brahmachari. So I had to say that too. And it worked. The police came in 5 minutes. They came and they kicked out, they ejected all those Muslims. And then this was a great parking lot area. This was a fantastic place to do book distribution. And we had it all for ourselves. And for 10, 15 minutes, the books were flying. Then the police came back and kicked us out. But anyway, 10, 15 minutes... You know, at least there was something. So what was going on there? I was, you know, kind of maybe just recently initiated or even still bhakta, new bhakta. And it took a lot for me to do that. Even King Yudhisthira had a problem with lying when Krishna asked him. So I'm not trying to glorify myself, but somehow by Krishna's mercy we get some special... It was special, It might be considered, it goes the other way around. What might be not sinful in the mundane context becomes sinful and transcendental. And what may be, sinful in the mundane context becomes glorious in the transcendental context. I mean, I'm not saying it's the greatest thing I ever did or anyone could do, but it was mercy that I was able to surrender to doing something that was so difficult. So the last subject, which we don't have really much time now at all, but how can I change the whole presentation about this other point that the Goddess of Fortune makes, that nobody can escape the power of the Lord in terms of time and death? Well, we can just mention King Muchakunda. What was his realization? Purarathair Hema Prakrishtitais Charan. Matanga Jayarva Naradeva Sangitam. It starts off by saying, and it's also a good lesson in upadis, designations. Like the word king is a designation, because you're talking about the same body, Kalevaro, but at the beginning, before Pura, Ratayad, Hema, Pariskritais, Charam, this is King Muchakunda's realization after he burned up Kaliabana, and he's seeing Krishna and he's glorifying Krishna and he's saying how foolish we kings are. We think we're so great. But actually, what is called the king at the beginning, who rides on great chariots with carved gold, and or maybe instead of that, he's riding on maddened elephants, jubilant elephants, you know. And he's called Naradev, he's called King, Naradeva Sangita. That same body, by the force of your invincible time factor, ta eva kalena duratyayenate, what is it called? Kalevaro, that body is called Vit Krimi Bhashma Sangita. Maybe we don't like to translate that, but we have to. It's worms, stool, and ashes. The same body that at one point was called king, that same body now it's called worms, stool, and ashes. Why? Because of your invincible time factor. So King, was he a king? The Muchakunda, he had that realization. And we should also be aware of that. Mrityu sarvaharashtaham. Krishna comes as death. Kalosmi lokakshaya krit privido. And in another class we can talk about time and death and all that. So basically we try to discuss the actual context and how Srila Prabhupada mercifully expands from that context. So instead of talking about who is God, which is a good subject, but he wanted to talk about who is a devotee. And that's basically what we tried to present. So thank you very much for your kind attention. We really don't have much time, but if there's a quick one or two quick questions. Yes. Mike, for instance.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. Your very insightful class, philosophical analysis about the importance of compassion, especially. If I can just perhaps offer one alternative reflection on your parking lot story. I would suggest perhaps, and I'll share another story I heard the other day and reference it. I did similar things in those eras. I would suggest that perhaps because you were ill-advised to lie, Krishna arranged for the immediate karma to come back for you to also lose the opportunity to distribute books in that parking lot. I'll share a broader example, something I just learned a few days ago. We know in some parts of the world, ISKCON is under some government surveillance. They don't trust us, and we have difficulties even existing. So in Russia, there's a particular person there who's very adamant against the Krishna movement. He's been an adversary for many, many years. And I met him once. He wouldn't even shake my hand. He had such a bad opinion of us. And just this one trip while I was in Mayapur, I mentioned this person's name to one of the devotees from Russia, and he said, well, you know his history, don't you? I said, no. He said, well, when he came to America years ago, one of our enthusiastic, overly zealous, ill-trained devotees was trying to distribute a book to him, and I was told from a very reliable source, was poking him in his stomach with the book, take, take, take. He was a visitor from another country, didn't know the culture. That was his impression of the Hare Krishna movement. Now, is that the whole source of the problem today? I can't say. Did it possibly contribute to the problem? Seems likely. And so, you know, we look back 30 years ago, so the mistakes we make today in lying, for example, we know we take four vows. One of them is to be truthful, you know, with four pillars. So I would just, because it's an international class, and I see sometimes you probably have a very broad, I'm sure, understanding of that story, but some of us may misinterpret and think right. that I can lie for Krishna, but I want to point out that every single time we do that, we get a reaction. And if our movement's going to truly become influential and respected on an international level, from the top to the bottom, we have to stop these things. There's no excuse. I'm just preaching to me more than anybody. We need to stop these things because we're meant to change the world, and we won't do it if we keep acting on lower levels. So thank you for reminding us the real thing is to be acting properly. I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you. In the pioneering days, we were a little bit more fast and loose with these things. So there's a question of principle and application also. The principle is there. Yudhisthira Maharaj is an example. And there are cases where you can call it a white lie. In other words, it's not absolutely, you know, that even in preaching that we should never lie. Sometimes it may be unavoidable. At least we call it a white lie. But I fully agree with you that we have to emerge from those wild times and not be so cavalier, as you say, about applying this. In the example that in my own case that I gave, where I called the police and all that, yeah, there was a risk that could have backfired. But in that particular context, there wasn't the wires probably wouldn't have crossed from a practical point of view. In terms of my own character, it didn't affect me at all because I still didn't like to lie after that. So I was just pointing out that I was trying to point out the difference. Yes, it can't be even in other religious sects, as Prabhupada calls them. You can't say, well, I accept Jesus, now I can do any damn thing. So we can't say, well, I accept Prabhupada, now I can just do any damn thing. It doesn't work like that. Both internally, we won't grow in our character, and externally, as you're pointing out, it can have very reverse repercussions that exactly were against. I also had experiences like that where people had met other book distributors who mistreated them, and they said, never again. I wouldn't come near me. So that point is well taken. So we ran out of time. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Right now, I wanted to just invite a disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami who's going to announce about his samadhi observance. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.